Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, the people of Kosovo went to the polls on Sunday as the country held municipal elections, and it's worth, pondering why is it we have not heard much of Kosova over the past decade or so. Well, one man who's been keeping a close eye on all of this is the CEO of the Henderson Risk Group, Duncan Bullivant, who was a member of the Kosovo verification mission all those years ago. Duncan, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Now, you might bring us back to the history of that particular country, because it was the issue was resolved 25 years ago by NATO.
Yes, it was. And prior to that, and if we go back to the early 90s, Kosovo was never an independent state, but it was an autonomous region within Yugoslavia. It was part of Serbia. Under the Tito leadership, it was foreseen that Kosovo may well at some point secede. But Slobodan Milosevic, a name that we haven't heard much of recently, managed the ethnic tensions between the majority Albanian population and the minority Serb population to a point where he felt that he had to intervene to protect the Serb minority from the Albanian majority, and used it as a political football to whip up ethnic hatred. And we saw the outcome of that in Bosnia and Herzegovina with the war there.
Now, Tito was the glue that held the Yugoslav peninsula together, and it was always anticipated that when he was gone, that the whole peninsula might fragment.
Yes, there was always that risk. I mean, I think it's always also worth remembering that he held it together ferociously. That, you know, there was a very large number of political prisoners in the former Yugoslavia. It was a pretty relaxed socialist environment, but it was by no means free of secret police and phone tapping. So it wasn't a nirvana. But I think when Tito passed away, it didn't take long for the various elements within Yugoslavia to start wanting to sort of forge their own paths along ethnic and nationalistic lines. And they all, using the former Communist Party as a bedrock, formed sort of nationalist communist groupings, which were pretty ferocious on some occasions, to the elements of the group that weren't, you know, if you weren't a Serb, you needed to get out of Serb territory. If you weren't a Croat, you needed to get out of Croatian territory. And so things started to fragment. But I think what is important to note here is that the war that ended up destroying Yugoslavia has led to a degree of stability in the region, only after NATO intervention.
Now,
only after NATO intervention.
NATO intervened without the say-so of the United Nations. What prompted NATO to intervene at that point?
I think initially the issue of Srebrenica in 1995, which was declared a genocide, the United Nations actually ruled it was genocide, was the final straw for the US administration and for the European element of NATO. And they felt that a failure to intervene against the aggression coming from the Bosnian Serbs would have been a crime too great. And that led to a sustained NATO bombing campaign, which brought the Serbs to the negotiating table at the Dayton Peace Agreement at the end of 1995. And that ended that war, but it didn't resolve the issues in Kosovo, which then spilled on. And in 1999, NATO had to go in to prevent a mass exodus of Kosovo Albanians at the hand of the Serbs, which was heading very much down the genocide route. and NATO intervened there to prevent that.
Now, I'm looking at a 2005 ethnic composition map of Kosovo. I mean, the Albanians call it Kosovar, the Serbs call it Kosovo, and I'm not sure what our sensitivities are in that labelling. But looking at the map, it's hugely Albanian, with in the north a significant enclave of Serbs, and then in the south a smaller enclave of Serbs. And dotted right around the country, there are Serbs, there are Turks, there are Bosniaks, there are Roma, there are Gorani. So it looks like it's hugely Albanian. Why is there any kind of instability there at all if the Albanians are dominant?
There are about 80,000 Serbs living in Kosovo, which has a total population of about just under 2 million, about 1.8 million. The reason that it's contentious is that one of NATO's aims when it went in 1999 was to prevent inter-ethnic violence. And NATO didn't intervene to give the Albanians a free hand in being beastly to the Serbs, even though the Serbs have been pretty beastly to the Albanians. And I think that what has happened over the last few years is that there has been a lurch in domestic politics. And by the way, you know, the majority Albanian population were absolutely right to hold a grudge against some of the things that have been done to them in 98 and 99. And I think, you know, we went in, NATO went in, there was a 50,000 strong NATO force. And one of the things that we wanted to make sure happened, certainly from the political point of view, was that to make sure there was no retribution, to make sure that actually we preserved the patchwork, ethnic patchwork quilt, which you so eloquently described earlier, is that should be retained, because that was what we were ultimately intervening for. We didn't want to create a mono-ethnic state of run by Albanians. And no decent Albanian wanted that either. They wanted to preserve their history and their culture. So I think what has happened in the last five years or so is there's been a bit of a lurch towards sort of nationalism within the political scene in Kosovo. And of course, at the same time in Belgrade, you've got a, you know, President Vucic is a veteran of the Milosevic era. Serbia plays its hand in Kosovo. Serbia refers to Kosovo as Kosovo I Metohija. It doesn't recognize Kosovo as an independent state. And of course, having 80,000.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Of its ethnic citizens, as it would see them in that territory, gives it skin in the game, and that does create a tension. But what has happened in the last few years has actually seen a politicization of some of the institutions in Kosovo, and perhaps a move towards victimization and maltreatment of the Serb minority.
Now, when you look at the predominant Albanian ethnic makeup of Kosovo, is there any case for a greater Albania absorbing Kosovo?
Well, it's very interesting. It's a good question. But Albania itself is not as homogenous as people might think. And there's a big difference between northern Albania and southern Albania, both in terms of dialect, both in terms of cultural background and history. There's no real desire on the part of the Albanians out of Tirana. Albania proper doesn't really desire a greater Albania. But the dominant political force in Kosovo in the last 5 to 8 years has been a political party called Vetvendosia, led by an individual called Arben Kurti. And he is very much a greater Albania fan, much to the consternation of the international community and others. And, you know, there's been this sort of gradual creep towards Albanianization of the region, which, of course, play is music to the ears of nationalists in Belgrade and Serbia, who will tell you that this was always the plan and we've got to preserve ourselves against it. But economically, it makes no sense. And culturally, a Kosovar Albanian is a very different creature from an Albanian Albanian. They grew up in Yugoslavia. They had a more open society. Don't forget, Albania was under Enver Hoxha. It was a sort of Leninist hellhole for a better part of 50 to 60 years. So there's a very different pulse between the two. But the Greater Albania concept doesn't have much support outside some pretty wacky academic circles.
Okay, but I mean, Albania, as I discovered from an Albanian taxi driver in Dublin recently, Albania is modernizing. I mean, it's
rapidly.
You would not recognize it from the country of Hoxha. It just is so different.
Rapidly modernizing. It's, you know, if you go to some of the best restaurants in the region, the food is amazing. They've discovered oil and natural gas. You know, they're getting on with things. They're blessed with a very attractive coastline, and they are moving forward rapidly. But what is also worth noting is that the economic cooperation between Albania, North Macedonia, Serbia, and Montenegro is very strong. You know, they all get on with each other. There's no reason why they shouldn't. And yet you've got Kosovo sitting in the middle of all this at the moment, which is a little bit sort of a bit of a gooseberry, to be honest with you, politically.
Now, you make the point that often the international community, in this case NATO, intervenes to sort out a problem, and then they tend to go away, leaving the problem to fester. You know, the problem is still there, and we're observing it now in the Middle East, where Donald Trump decides that after 3,000 years, we've got peace in the Middle East, which is a ludicrous statement. But anyway, something will happen, and then the interested parties will all walk away.
Yeah, I mean, I think the staying power, it's very easy to think that regime change or these interventions lead to long-term stability. And I think that there are examples in Africa with South Sudan where the international community engaged and then took its eye off the ball. You can argue that Iraq, you know, I don't think anybody's going to try and make a case that Iraq was a success. It wasn't a success. Look at the cost in terms of treasure and lives. There were other ways of doing it. And I think when we look at the former Yugoslavia, which, let's face it, you know, less than 30 years ago, this was the big thing in the news. Everybody was talking about, you know, Sarajevo and then the war, you know, Srebrenica and then Kosovo. But if you look at actually what happened in Bosnia, you know, there was a huge NATO commitment, huge UN commitment that went in. Bosnia today is a basket case. You know, it's you know, divided ethnically, 51% to the federation, which is a Muslim Croat federation, and 49% to the Republika Srpska. But they don't work together. It's not going at all well, you know. And economically, it's you know, down in the dumps. Kosovo is a different story, and I think the reason that Kosovo is a different story is that the engagement in Kosovo has never gone away. It's been intense. I mean, I mentioned earlier, 50,000 NATO troops arrived in Kosovo. Now, Kosovo is 30 times larger than Gaza, but they have not dissimilar populations. Gaza's population is probably just over 2 million. Kosovo's population is just under 2 million. But the reason that Kosovo has been to a certain degree a success is obviously, you know, there is a majority Albanian community. And so the inter-ethnic violence was easy to maintain, easy to suppress, and eventually died a death. But I think that the huge success in Kosovo was the fact that the international community stayed the course. They got the training of the police right. They made sure they slowly removed the Kosovo Liberation Army, the KLA or the UÇK. They slowly removed their tendrils from controlling the key institutions and the utilities, which was some doing because they'd taken control of those after the conflict. And so we now see a functioning liberal democracy who have just had elections that seem to have taken them away from a slightly mono-ethnic approach to a more sort of liberal and open society.
So the results of the elections at the weekend are positive.
They are heading in the right direction. They have benefited a party that in itself was part of the problem at the in 1999, 2000. It was unreconstructed in terms of its history. They've all gone off and worked very hard at reform and democratization within the political parties. And now what you've got at the municipal level, it would appear, which is very important, all politics is local, is that there is a rejection of this nationalist fervor. And it would appear that people want to go back to a more tolerant and more inclusive future. And I think in terms that will benefit them economically no end.
So the lesson from this is, Duncan, to stay the course, and these various ambitious plans just might work.
Stay the course, and you have to resource it. And I think the challenge now in Gaza, and there are similarities between the Gaza situation and Kosovo, not too many, but there are similarities. And that is, if you make assumptions that it's all going to work out, and if you make assumptions that you can take people's word for their commitment, if you make assumptions, it will go wrong. But you have to stay the course, and you have to resource it with security personnel, and you have to resource it with immediate reconstruction, so that there is economic activity, because that's at the end of the day the only way you're going to drain support for Hamas is by giving people jobs and putting more bread on their plates.
Duncan Bullivant, CEO of the Henderson Risk Group and a former member of the Kosovo Verification Mission. Thank you very much, Duncan, for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.